Hello, welcome to Enlighten My Loafers. Today's episode is a special one for two reasons. One, it's exactly why I started this podcast. Okay, I started Enlighten My Loafers because I wanted to create an entry-level style and fashion podcast for people like me that are new to caring and just want to learn how to care harder and better. But I also started this podcast because I wanted to talk to the stylish men that I admire about clothes, because people rarely talk to men about clothes. That brings me to the second reason why this episode is special. I got to have that talk with Jared Harris, a man whose style inspires me, whether he's playing a character or just being himself on a red carpet or chat show. Speaking of characters, let's just run through some of those real quick. There's the haunted Royal Navy captain on The Terror, the King of England on The Crown, a pre-presidential Ulysses S. Grant in Lincoln, a stressed-out chemist working to avert disaster in Chernobyl, and my personal style hero, Lane Price, a very English financial officer on Mad Men. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. I haven't even mentioned Fringe or The Expanse or Lost in Space or I Shot Andy Warhol or the upcoming Amazon original Carnival Row, where he plays a man of wealth named Absalom Breakspear. Can't wait. Jared Harris is one of the greats, an Emmy nominee for Mad Men and now an Emmy nominee again for Chernobyl, and I got to talk to him about the inspiration behind Lane Price, about his legendary father Richard Harris, about his love of color, and much to my delight, I got to talk to him about, well, you'll find out towards the end of our chat. So I've talked enough, definitely. So here, and this is a sentence I absolutely never ever thought I would ever say, is my talk with Jared Harris.
They seek him here, they seek him there, his clothes are loud, but never square.
Happy to chat to you, and I think I might struggle to answer some of your questions, but I'll do my best.
Well, the whole point of my podcast is I'm someone that knows, well, I don't know nothing about, like, clothes and style and fashion, so I'm just trying to talk to people that are, so you might still be on the same level as me, to be honest.
Okay, that could make for a very interesting chat.
Yeah, we'll just be two clueless people talking. But yeah, thank you so much. I've been such a big fan of your work for so long, so this is a quite an honor. So thank you and your lovely wife for agreeing to set this up.
She's the best.
Yeah, she really is. I could start by just asking about Team Harris, because I love your social, like, the social media support that has come out around you and all of your work over the past, like, year or so. How did that start?
Well, she does 90% of the social media stuff. She's dragged me, not kicking and screaming, but certainly, there's a certain sense of that sort of reluctance that you have as you get older to sort of step into strange territory and stuff that you don't really understand. And I didn't get it. I didn't understand it. And she was on Facebook, and you know, when she was younger, she had an enormous number of pen pals.
Oh.
And she's very, very good at staying in touch with people. And and I think that heart, the Facebook thing, and then social media was an extension of that, you know. So, I was impressed and in awe of just how many people she was able to stay in touch with on the socials. And then she sort of got me into it. She got me onto Twitter, which I do myself sometimes, and an Instagram account and a Facebook, which basically that she does most of that stuff.
Yeah, and it's great. I mean, it's a really good fostering of a community, and I mean, it's also let us see a lot of the awesome clothes that you wear to all of these like press events and stuff. Like just most recently, the TCA Awards, that really awesome like lavender suit that you wore.
So
when you're deciding you're going to the TCA Awards, how do you arrive to, I'm going to wear this awesome lavender suit?
The number of events that you end up having to go to, particularly if you're fortunate enough to be nominated something, it means that you simply, your wardrobe just doesn't run to having that much, not variety, but you understand what I mean. And you can't buy all that stuff, so you get help. And I have a stylist who helps me, who brings in options, and you just try a bunch of different stuff on, and then you kind of look at what feels the most appropriate. So for something like that, because we're heading into the award season,
yeah.
And what men, the railroad tracks of what men can wear at those award shows is fairly narrow.
Yeah.
So that seemed like, well, here's an opportunity to wear some colour and to have a bit of fun, and not go in a dark suit or black suit or some sort of quasi sort of tuxedo thing, which you're going to be stuck in.
Yeah, the Emmys are coming up.
The Emmys are coming up, and then if you're lucky enough to be involved in the follow-on stuff from that, it's all black tie, you know, so there's only so much fun you can have in black tie.
Well, if it's like with the Emmys, you've worn like a white sport coat or like a white tuxedo coat with things. Like, you've figured out ways to kind of like spice up the normal tuxedo look for those big award shows.
Yeah, that I actually had made for my wedding.
Oh.
I think we suddenly realized, well, that was a version of the tuxedo that was created for tropical climes, if you like, because it's too hot to wear a big black jacket and black trousers. And we just suddenly looked at each other and went, well, we're going to the Emmys and it's 102 degrees out there. I think exactly what that was designed for. So, that seemed like a good opportunity. But yes, you know what I mean? You've got a black suit or you've got a navy blue suit, there's not that much you can do with it, really, when you go to the rest of the black tie thing. You all look like very well-dressed penguins.
Yeah. Well, I also, like, looking back at, you know, going through the Getty images and looking at your, like, red carpet stuff from, you know, like, 20 years ago, you've had a really cool, like, style evolution because, like, you know, 20 years ago, there was a real, like, 70s rock and roll vibe with a lot of the, you know, velvet and leather and
I
suede.
Yeah. But, you know, back then, no one was helping me. and I was basically working in independent movies and off-Broadway theatre and a kind of... I think I know the one you're talking about. That was the look that I wore to the Mr. Deeds premiere.
There's that one.
With that purple silk shirt.
Yeah.
And I had a kind of velvet, a black velvet suit and some funky glasses. Yeah, I mean, you know, what you end up doing for those things is because no one's actually helping you. You can't afford to go out and buy clothes because you're working in independent. That was my independent movie. That was my rare foray into a studio movie. So you sort of raid your closet and try and find something that hopefully goes together from your closet. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
I just didn't have a lot of suits. If you think about it, I mean, a good suit's going to cost you a couple of grand.
Yeah.
You know? And I just wasn't able to go ahead and spend $3,000 or $4,000 on a suit. You know, that was almost probably half a year's rent.
Yeah. Well, I also I also kind of love the fact that you just had that stuff in your closet. Like, saying you didn't work with a stylist then is kind of really cool. Like, who were your fashion, like, style icons that inspired you at that point to, like, own all that, like, velvet and leather and suede? It's very Mick Jagger in a way. Like, it's very like Ray Davies kind of, or Dave.
I like the way that velvet felt. I think you know, my mother used to make us always dress up for Christmas dinner, New Year's Eve and Christmas. Christmas Eve and Christmas dinner, we had to wear a suit. And then she used to like to, when we would be on holiday at my father's place down in the Bahamas, if she was visiting, then we would dress for dinner.
Ah, yeah.
And certainly if we went out to a restaurant, we would dress up for dinner. I would say, if I'm lucky, when I wear something that works, because some of her style has rubbed off on me, and she has fantastic fashion sense.
Hmm.
If I'm unlucky, my father's style has rubbed off on me, and just to give you an idea of what he used to wear, there's a story that I love telling, which is there was a period when we were all living in London. This is after my parents, they're long since divorced. Yeah, and I was probably at this point in my late 20s. And either my uncle or my mother would do Sunday lunch. And then my father was in London working. So he was there. Unusually, he was there for quite a long extended period of time. And so he would then, after having done a Sunday lunch at Mum's, Sunday lunch at Morgan, Sunday lunch at Mum's, he'd go, right, I'm doing Sunday lunch next week. It's going to be, we're going to have a Sunday lunch at the Savoy Hotel. Now, his company had a room at the Savoy Hotel for 28 years. And he'd go, we're going to have lunch at the Savoy Grill. This is my treat on me. So he goes, now, Jared, do you have a suit? He goes, yeah, I have a suit. You bought me a suit. He says, is it clean? Get it clean. I go, you know it's clean, Dad. He goes, do you have a tie? Don't embarrass your mother now. Don't show up in some gaudy tie. I mean, does it look good? Is the suit clean? Is it respectable? Do you have a good tie? I go, yes, Dad, I have it. I go, right, well, so wear that. Don't forget that. Don't embarrass your mother. And so we'd all gather in the lobby, waiting for him to arrive from his room upstairs. The lift doors would open, and out he'd appear in a green naff-naff jumpsuit with trainers on and a long blue overcoat and nothing else. And the maitre d' would look at him coming across the lobby and just roll his eyes to the heavens and sigh. And then put on this smile just as he appeared, and he'd say, good afternoon, Mr. Harris. Are you lunching up with us this afternoon? He goes, I am. Do you have a reservation? You know I do. He says, and then he'd say, are we dressed for lunch, sir? And he goes, I am. And then he'd look at him and say, shall it be the usual arrangement then, sir? And my father would go, it will. And we'd go into the restaurant, and we'd have a booth, and we'd sit down, and then he would get a Chinese screen and screen our table off from the rest of the viewers and the diners in the restaurant so as not to offend them by my father's sense of fashion. When it doesn't work, I blame him.
I think it works. I think it works all the time.
I remember going into Paul Smith and seeing his just really beautifully made silk shirts that were handmade from India, and they were basically all one of a kind. And I just bought a lot of them because, I like colour. I do like colour. I find it annoying that that a men's clothes and style is. It's generally fairly conservative, you know, people, they wear blue, dark blue, black or grey.
Right, yeah.
I would say most of my suits are somewhere in the range of those colours, you know?
Yeah, I think that's what's really interesting about your talk show appearances and your red carpet looks and everything is because, you know, the characters you play are very, I mean, you kind of only play roles that require you to look at a 10, like you're so dressed up. That to see you on, like, the red carpet and stuff where you're wearing, like, the red suit that you wore just a couple months ago, like, things like that, it's, like, this really surprising, like, oh, that's a different side that we don't get to see usually in the roles that you play. And I think that's super cool.
I do like that. I enjoy it. Part of what you're talking about there is what happened with Mad Men was that I was allowed, because of Mad Men, and having such an important place in a men's fashion conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But suddenly, designers were interested in helping me and how I appeared. And that wasn't my first season. That was only after my first season I got to the second season. So the production through Janie Bryant had a relationship with Brooks Brothers.
Oh.
So I think one of the any years, they dressed everybody. Brooks Brothers dressed everybody.
Yeah.
All the men from the show. And then Hugo Boss were interested as well. So, you know, they would lend me clothes to wear. When one did all the big promotional junkets and everything, again, they would provide outfits so that I, because they knew that it was an opportunity and I would have to return the outfits afterwards,
yeah.
which is fine. But I mean, so they helped out. And of course, because of what that show was and who I was playing on that show, it was a classic look.
Yeah, Lane of all of them is the one. Like, I was like, if you're playing any of the other guys, you're going in and you're just wearing like a basic like two piece suit, normal. But like Lane, being from England, has the vests, the flannels and tweed and all those great patterns and accessories that like I love. Like Lane is one of my style icons because of that.
Well, so Lane. It was interesting because I understood right away as I was being fitted for Lane by Janie Byers that one of her role models for Lane's look was Rex Harrison. And I mentioned it. So I went, oh, Rex Harrison used to wear a waistcoat just like this. And she went, oh, and she was so surprised that I noticed. I said, yeah, he was my stepfather.
You come by it honest.
I know what he wore. I wore it every day for 5 years.
Well, what were those fittings like? I mean, like, did you like getting into all that for Lane? Like, did it really help you get into that character?
I really enjoyed that process. I really enjoyed the costume process, the fitting process. And I don't enjoy talking about it when we get into fittings. I just like to try stuff on.
Yeah.
Just keep putting clothes on, seeing... Because you can intellectually think, oh, this will go with this and it'll look nice and blah, blah, blah. But you can't tell until you put it on.
Yeah.
So, my approach at the costume fittings or when I have fittings for looks for events is they'll show up with 15 suits and I just immediately start putting, so let's just try it on, rather than talk about it.
Well, I guess that's also why so many of your things are so adventurous. Like wearing like hats and sunglasses, like so many good accessories that you also, that you also do that you also see a lot of men shy away from, which I think is really cool that you embrace that.
The hat was, that was something. I mean, I suppose it's slightly Mad Men inspired, but it was, we took a trip to Puerto Rico and, they're handmade hats there.
Oh, wow.
You just walk down the streets of the capital there, and that you'll walk past at any given time, 15 or 20 handmade shops that would have these hats. So you just thought, oh, this is crazy. I mean, it seems like you'd be remiss and you'd like going to Havana and not buying some Cuban cigars.
Yeah. So there's something about getting souvenirs
or
from places.
Going to Dublin and not having a Guinness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about your two big projects for this year, 2019, are Chernobyl, which obviously is like a huge success, Emmy nominated. But then you also have Carnival Row coming out at the end of August. And if you just look at the way your characters look on those shows, they're kind of at the opposite end of the spectrum of like dressed up. But they're both still dressed up is the thing. Like your character in Chernobyl still wears a suit. It's an ill-fitting suit. He still wears one. How does that wardrobe influence how you play the character, especially on these two very different shows?
I think it has a big influence, obviously, and that's why I enjoy it so much. I mean, first of all, it's part of the childlike aspect of the job, which is great fun, which is the make believe and the pretend, the dressing up part. Always entertaining when you're a kid. And I'm fascinated to know what the designer, their perspective on the character, because again, part of the process of working in this, not in this business, but working in this medium, if you like, is you spend a lot of time with a character by yourself and you're imagining the character in your own mind. But that will not be the version of the character that is ultimately realised, because that version of the character has to live... it has to operate in the world where you're dealing with other characters, and that means immediately that the effect of those characters is going to change the nature of your character, because that's the point of drama.
Right.
You're going to be operating as well within the director's vision, and that's the single most important consistent vision in the entire process. And then you work with the designer as well, and how they perceive and they, your character, and they bring that vast wealth of knowledge to bear. So I enjoy all that whole part of it. The difference being between those two shows, the one, the fantasy, so there is no historical record to fall back on.
Right, yeah.
But they still needed to make decisions about... There needed to be templates for the looks of the various different worlds, and I think it's been erroneously referred to as a Victorian era, which is wrong.
Uh-huh.
Because actually, the look of the show, the look of the human element of the world, isn't English. It actually owes more to a sort of German Bavarian fashion and choices at the time. It's actually European. It's not English.
Wow, yeah.
So, but of course, I suppose that's a nuance that unless you say it, it's hard to pick up on. And of course, my character in Carvalho is extremely wealthy and is expected to project a certain sense of power and status.
Yeah, there's a lot of capes. There's a lot of capes and like ascots and, you know, all of it. It's really luxurious.
But if you look at it, if you go, you know, if you look at it, it's actually a sort of European Germanic inspired look, as opposed to an English Victorian inspired look. And that, obviously there were ties between those families, you know. I mean, Victorian, I think Queen Victoria was more German than she was English, but anyway.
Yeah.
And then, of course, in Chernobyl, my character has, he's a mid-level party official with some minor access to some of the privileges that party officials had, but not much. And one of the things that we strove for on that show in every single department was the authenticity.
Yeah.
So the costume designer specifically, she actually found material from the Soviet factories that hadn't been used.
Oh my God.
To make the clothes.
God.
Some guy was thinking, what the hell am I going to do with this stuff? No one's ever going to want it. I don't know why I'm hanging on to it. Suddenly,
that's so great.
The production comes along and goes, we'll have the lot.
I feel like that deserves an Emmy. That deserves an Emmy right there for, like, that's amazing.
And then we had one of the costume assistants actually worked in those shops and in those factories and helped with because of course you have to have the suits made. And
yeah.
They have to, you know, they're made by hand. And the problem with that is that you'll make them actually fit the person. And she would constantly go, no, that looks too good. You know, they were never fitted to, the clothes weren't made to fit an individual. It was a one-size-fits-all thing. So, I mean, the chances were that you were going to be in between sizes.
Yeah.
And the sleeves would be either too long or too short, and they'd be slightly, off-cut. They wouldn't quite match properly, and the seams weren't lined up so that the fabric, if they had just even the faintest of patterns, so that the fabric would sort of line up perfectly, so the lines would line up perfectly. If they, you know, even things like that, there wasn't that kind of attention to detail because they had to churn out so much of it.
Yeah.
And then the colours were specific about the colour palette. Again, and one of the things that I found interesting about, although we were telling our story was in the 80s, the Soviet was the system, if you like, fashion-wise, was a decade behind. So really the colours were more reminiscent of the things that were available in the West in the 70s.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely the vibe that you get, is like 60s technology looking 70s colors, and like, but it's the 80s. It's kind of, it really does sell that, that Russian flavor, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, I was wondering if you've ever played a character, and then after you're done playing them, have you wanted to incorporate some of that character's look into your own personal style?
Oh, I see, yes. I mean, I try and keep something from every show that I've done, every character I've played, either it's a prop or a piece of clothing or something, and to incorporate it into the style. You know, I have to say, I really enjoyed, in that Mad Men period, there was a really great vintage shop in Toronto called, I think it was called Celebrations, and I was there working for a while on something else, and I go in and raid them for pocket squares and for tie pins and cufflinks, you know. Because those are the sort of areas that you can express individuality as a man in your clothes. You know, your suits are fairly traditional and conservative, color-wise, sort of design-wise. But you can add little touches of flair through those little accessories, you know. So I just went and raided all the vintage stores that I could find to pick up stuff like that. And I got a really good collection, actually, of vintage ties and vintage cufflinks and stuff like that. So that definitely got incorporated. I'm from Jamie Bryan. I understood what a well-fitting suit meant, and what you needed to have adjusted when you went in. You buy a suit off the rack and you have it tailored then to fit you specifically. What are the things that you need to have adjusted? And I remember going in to buy my cousin, Tudor Rhys Williams, a suit for his, and he turned 18 or 19, and he was going to start interviewing for jobs, and my brothers and I said, right, well, you're going to need a suit. Let's go and get a suit for you. And I was able to sit there and tell the tailor in the store, bring this in, let this out, you know, give them a bit more room here, you know, stuff like this. I definitely, off that show, learned a lot about how to dress.
Yeah.
And got the opportunity to practice what I'd been taught, because I got the support afterwards in terms of, you know, that people were interested in lending you the clothes to buy, to wear to the event.
Well, and you only really play really stylish characters in a way. I mean, like, you know, the Terror is terrifying, but also, like, everyone looked really good in those, you know.
Except for me, I'm going to say, I do have a thing that was on that one where my clothes just didn't fit as well as other people. I would sit there and go, why does his pants fit him and mine? I look like I could carry something. I could hide some people in the back of my pants here. And they go, well, you know, you're supposed to be, you're not that wealthy, so you haven't been able to go to a tailor. Like, I go that, but still, I mean.
Yeah, I want pants to fit.
Most people look pretty good in that dark navy blue, and that's why the British chose it.
Yeah.
The British Navy chose it. But I did steal something from that show. I took some of those really wild, completely authentic tinted sunglasses.
Whoa.
That they had for when they went out onto the ice.
Wow.
And they had, his sunglasses had a special thing on the side, because you needed to block the sunlight coming in through the side of the lens as well.
Yeah.
Because that could cause eyes blindness too. So there were sunglasses that had little, special shades over the sides of the glasses that contacted your skin that way as well. They were funky, those things.
But you can also, you can make them work on a red carpet, I'm sure.
Yeah.
A less formal event. Yeah.
I took a pair of Lane's, his famous glasses. I have a pair of those.
Ah.
And they, because I was that last episode, I was snapping them at a furious rate in that last scene in the Jaguar.
Yeah.
So I kept a pair of, well, they were practical for me. They had gotten my prescription.
Oh.
And it wasn't as though anybody else could wear them.
Yeah. So, yeah, you have to take them. They're yours.
Yeah.
My Mad Men rewatch had to stop at the Last Lane episode because it's very, very hard. It's like, I can't go past this point. I don't know. That's a personal thing about me, I guess.
Yeah, that was a kind of a sad moment. That.
Still, it's my favorite show.
Because that was season 5. And then season 6, Matt does a really curious thing because I remember him saying that there was a television rule that he'd been given by David Chase on The Sopranos.
Yeah.
And that was that with regards to your main male character, that your audience will forgive that character absolutely anything and everything they do, as long as they are the best person at their job.
Ah.
And if you've established that your character is the best at his job, then you have a sort of license to behave badly, basically. And of course, he took full advantage of that for the first 5 years. But then I think Matt decided to challenge himself and the audience and to test his theory.
Yeah, because
and if you look at what he does to Don in season 6,
yeah,
he actually makes him suck at his job.
Yeah,
and fail. And I think he wanted to see whether or not could he keep the audience on side and could he bring the character back.
And it worked.
That's David's theory.
Yeah. It worked for me.
We can't declare inside with Lane dying.
Which is not fair. I guess I'll wrap up by asking one final thing. So I always like to ask my guests if there's anything they want to see more people do with their clothes and their style. Is there anything that you would like to see more, more men try to incorporate into their wardrobe?
I remember used to think I'd never understood this sort of absolute mania that women had for shoes, but I completely get it now. And quite often I think you start with the shoes and then you go and decide because you're going to play, because something, your shoes are going to play off your tie and the tie, and then the suit's going to be what the suit is, but that's where you're going to have you're going to be able to have some fun. I really like cufflinks.
Oh.
I mean, I like those the French cuffs. I think that says a lot if you decided to wear.
Yeah. It's like an extra step, or it's like another touch of flourish.
I wonder if they'll ever come out with like a shirt with like fake cufflinks.
I feel like that has to already exist somewhere. Like
it's like instead of a button, it's like attached to it. Maybe it's something like instead of that sort of those fake ties that you put on, yeah, you sort of attach it to the button on your shirt and it looks like you're wearing cufflinks.
When I worked at a movie theater, they made button covers that you would put, you would wear like just a cheap old button down, but you would put these little black button covers over the buttons to make it look fancy.
Right, that
maybe something like that.
I mean, you're just trying to look for different ways to make your, an outfit pop in ways that, the idea for men is actually not to distract from the women.
Yeah.
you're meant to compliment the woman that you're with.
Yeah.
And she's you're the vase and she's the flower display.
y'all have really great couple like looks on red carpets too, because she's also super stylish. It's very, very stylish affair when y'all are around.
And then, most of the time, you're trying to she figures out what she's wearing, and then you try and find some way to accent again through your accessories or ties something that you're not matched, but you're in sync with the color palette that she's picked.
Yeah.
But yes, you're not supposed to outshine. Although I do have to say, I absolutely love those big, bold suits that RuPaul wears.
Oh, yes.
I enjoy, when I watch Drag Race,
Yeah.
I enjoy his suits more than I do now
his drag.
The drag, because the suits are just, they're just wild.
They're great.
They're so inventive, and he's got an amazing figure, an amazing build, both as a man and as a woman.
Yeah.
And they're both such different outlines as well.
Yeah.
And shapes. It's extraordinary. Really enjoy what he's doing with his men's suits, yeah. The colors and the cuts.
I have to ask then, are you interested in being a judge on a Drag Race UK? Because that is coming out
soon. You know, what I find, I love that show, and I admire their wit so much. I just would be terrified that I would come across as bland, because I just don't have that immediate wit. Like something occurs to me, you know, I've got that annoying time lag where 90 seconds later you suddenly go, damn it.
Well, you know, that's what they have edited. They got writers on staff. They could definitely make you pop. I mean, they could do a Chernobyl challenge, I am sure. Drag Race does challenges.
Oh, I would love to. I'm a huge fan. I'm a fan of the show, and we've met him now a couple of times on red carpet stuff. And he's extremely gracious and patient with our forming.
Yeah. Do you have like a favorite queen that you like love the most?
Last season, I enjoyed Banji a lot.
Oh yes, of course.
Although I didn't think he was the strongest.
No, you root for him. You love the underdog, yeah. Right? Underdog.
Yeah, I mean, personality wise, I thought that he. It's a weird thing. He has a sort of, I feel like he had the strongest, most genuine sense of who he was.
Yeah.
But in terms of the things that show's about and fashion and stuff, he just wasn't as versatile.
Yeah.
The last two were definitely the strongest two, and that the winner in the end was the more original choice in terms of making a statement about trying to open up the inclusivity of the genre, if you like. Whereas Brooklyn was next.
Yeah, Brooklyn.
Second. Yeah. And he was very, very strong, and he was a big contender, and he had a sort of big, big fashion statement and everything. But it felt as though it was slightly in a lane that had been trod before.
Right,
but
yeah.
He was very, very good, and in any other year, he would have won.
Exactly, yeah. That's... You know, yeah. We're at the point now where there are too many good drag queens. What a problem to have.
Yeah, what a problem to have. It's great. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. I really hope that this launches a campaign to get you on Drag Race UK at some point. if I can do that.
I will be very, very happy if that happens.
And I thank you again for taking the time.
You're gonna be wondering what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Getting on Drag Race. Oh, she just went... She's jumping up and down.
Yeah, that's my mission now. That is my mission. It's going to happen. How in the world did that happen? Well, it happened thanks to Jared's fantastic wife, Allegra, who fosters such a fantastic fan community on Twitter and Instagram, hashtag Team Harris. Thank you, Allegra, so much. I am forever in your debt, and we can all repay her by getting Jared on Drag Race UK, right? So tweet at Drag Race UK BBC right now. As for this week's challenge, you heard Jared. Try out some cufflinks and a French cuff, or, you know, indulge your shoe shopping habits. Share photos of you rising to meet these challenges with the hashtag ChallengeMyLoafers and tag EnlightenMyLoafers on Instagram. Thanks again to my guest, Jared Harris. You can stream Carnival Row on Amazon Prime Video starting on August 30th and cheer him and Chernobyl on at the Emmys on September 22nd. You can follow Enlighten My Loafers on Instagram for show notes, style inspiration, and more. If you have any questions about clothes, style, shopping, fashion, whatever, email enlightenmyloafers@gmail.com or slide into the DMs on Instagram. If you like what you've heard, please rate and review the show in Apple Podcasts. Here's what listeners are saying. Nick Cool wrote... Only one episode so far, but I can already tell that this will be a great source for style tips and help. The first guest was awesome and can't wait to see who else is lined up.
And C. McClure wrote, "Love the first episode, can't wait for more." And Yankee Skip writes, "I absolutely love the episode with Ad Butler, in so much that I ordered 2 pairs of sluggers for my upcoming holiday. I love your message about body positivity. Thank you." No, thank you. And Light My Loafers is edited by me with big help this week from Anna Rubinova, produced by Benjamin Mergeeb, photo by Sam Walker, and graphic design by Dylan Phelps. Of course, I have to give style thanks this week to Lane Price, a fictional character whose sartorial splendor inspires my real life. And thanks to all of you for listening. I'll be back next week with more questions and more answers. 'Cause he's a dedicated follower of fashion. He's a dedicated follower.